pretty excited for this week's show.
Yeah, we have some really great guests, Glenn and Alicia Perkins. I mean, Alicia, you might know her from her TED Talk, and everyone watches TED Talks.
They both live for a purpose, and that's what's really cool. I've known Glenn, or I shouldn't say I've known him. I've known about him. Isn't that funny? I've known about him. He didn't know who we were.
Right.
But I've known about him for a very long time, following his career. We're about the same age, growing up in Minnesota. He was a great baseball player, played at the U and then through the minors, and then obviously became a three-time All-Star with the Minnesota Twins, and now he's on to the next chapter of his life, but two very, very good people.
Yeah, and they have two girls, young girls, and so a lot that we can learn from each other,
yeah,
perhaps.
And what's cool is we're both at different stages of our lives, both as couples, because they've been married a little bit longer than we have, and their daughters are older than our kids.
That's right. Yeah, they're pre-teens. Almost teenagers, yeah. And so we're learning how things are getting a little bit easier for them now with the kids, as things continue to be challenging for us at this age, for our kids.
Yeah. All right, here it is, Glenn and Alicia Perkins.
Notice, but lately I've been driven.
August blooms.
And quattle.
Methodist.
Queen.
Works.
Only occasion.
It's 10 p.m. Do you know where your children are?
Welcome to Hey, They Grow Up So Fast with Corey and Camille Heppala.
Did you steal these from work?
I didn't steal them.
They're borrowed.
They were lent to me. Yeah.
Does the lender know that you have them?
Let's see. I think... Yes. Yes, okay. They do. Yes, they do. I had to ask for the mic flags, though, with the CCO on it.
Yeah.
I asked for that.
Oh, that makes it look more credible.
You look good with a CCO mic flag, Glenn. You look good with one.
I know. I'm probably violating contract right now.
I didn't want to bring it up. We both appreciate that you're here. So how'd you guys meet?
Oh, well, we tell two different stories.
Oh, good, just
well,
like us.
No, we.
Okay.
Well, you go first.
Okay. No, you go first because okay. All right, so we met a couple times, actually. Glenn doesn't recall the first one. We were at a keg race at the U of M at a house, and I had a boyfriend at the time. And I was there with my best friend, and Glenn was laying it on pretty thick. And she finally was like, she has a boyfriend. And he doesn't recall that. I do. Then I actually transferred schools and went to University of Northern Iowa for a semester. Mm-hmm. And I got an email from this guy, Glenn. And he's like, hey, but are you Alicia from Melrose? And I'm like,
it was the apartment complex I was living at. And she worked at the desk.
Not me. A different Alicia.
Yeah.
So I write back. I'm like, nope. Sorry, wrong Alicia. But I remembered Glenn because it's not a common name, obviously. So that was the second time. And then the third time was at a bar. And I had gone on a very platonic date with one of his teammates. And I think we just started talking. I think I don't really recall that very well.
I told you that if he got to take you on a date, then I did.
Oh, yeah.
And it worked.
It didn't work. No, that's not how it happened. We became friends for a long time after that. There was no date.
Well, yeah, no, but it got, no, probably not. We went to Passion of the Christ.
That was on my birthday. That still wasn't a date.
Really uplifting movie to go to. Yeah, a date. Right.
It was a great date movie. It was my 21st birthday.
We went to Halloween. I was dressed as Austin Powers.
That still wasn't a date either, though.
Okay.
And I was Marilyn Monroe, in case you were
wondering. No, I think the email thing was crazy. And then it was a long time. We should figure out the timeline of all that stuff. Really. I mean, that was the order. I just don't remember, times of...
We could probably look back in my medical records, because do you remember that I got mono right after I met you?
Yeah.
I gave her mono. He didn't give me mono.
So the other crazy thing, though, is her best friend at the time, I had met the first day of school, and we had a class together, and then we
made out.
No, not the first day. It was like the second day. I developed a crush for this girl, this other girl that was her friend. But so she lived on the West Bank. We lived on the East Bank in Territorial Hall. And
she being Alicia, not the best friend.
You yes. lived. Yes, Alicia yeah. lived
pretty on much the, in on the Augsburg. West Bank.
And so we would hang out, her friend and I, and like do, you know, whatever, like, hey, we're going to go to this party or we're going to go to this bar or whatever. And she would always talk about this friend that she met.
At freshman orientation.
At freshman orientation that lived on the West Bank, who never showed up. That was, I was going to come. So I started like, oh yeah, is your imaginary friend going to come with us tonight? Well, it ends up being her, was this friend. Like I didn't know at the time that the imaginary friend was her. And so I always thought that was,
ta-da.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you were 21, 22, 20, 19?
I think the first time, probably 19.
Yeah. 19 or 20.
And then, yeah, and then several times after that.
Well, classic move. I emailed Camille the first time, too.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Saw her on TV. Wait, and we were in a small market. I was at a different station. I emailed her and asked her out. Classic, dude. Great move.
It worked.
That is ballsy. Oh, my gosh. That I can't works. Believe. Did you respond to that?
I did. Yeah.
I think nowadays, like, that would totally red flag somebody. Like, if I had an email, if I, like, did
a TV show
and somebody emailed me, I'd be like, oh, my gosh. Well, that person is crazy.
I knew who he was because he was on TV.
Well, we hadn't met.
But we hadn't met. But I know who he was. Like,
and we have kind of two different stories, too. But the one part we do agree on is that I asked her out three times before you finally said yes. Yep. So,
and we met at a bar, too.
Oh, well, I feel like...
And I didn't remember it well either, Glenn.
Yeah, that's how stuff happened. The first time that keg race, that would have been our freshman year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was like trying to be friends and like get her. And then she wanted a ride to the airport.
Oh, yeah. This is where the story takes
and,
a turn.
And I remember like either talking to somebody or reading about it. And it was like,
you said you read it in Maxim.
Yeah, like Maxim magazine was like, how to get that girl that you like can't get to the next step with. And it was like, stop trying to be her friend. And so
day I was supposed to go to the airport, he calls me and says, I can't take you anymore.
Yeah.
I got to go to lunch with my parents.
Yeah. And so then, she was like, yeah, okay, whatever.
It didn't work.
Well, the airport moves, that's a big step. You know, that's a big step for somebody.
I
know,
but
I said,
I'm not doing it because I felt like I was just being used at that point. Like, that's what it was. Mm-hmm. I felt like I was being used. I'm like, I'm done trying to be a friend.
You're in the friend zone.
Yeah, I know. I need to move this to the next level. And then remember.
So you got to treat him like crap.
When we.
That's how you
when
do.
We officially. Yeah. You so had. Far, that's basically so what guys, it was. I mean, what else? Sounding, what else is Maxim like? That's isn't
oh
that
gosh.
Isn't that what that whole magazine was?
You guys just, totally sound like stereotypical males right now. Like,
well, that's what.
Drunk at the bar. Yeah, ignore them.
That was Maxim magazine, was like drunk men objectifying women.
Perfect. And
treating them like crap.
Yeah.
Well.
But. I do remember then when we officially started dating, we were talking on the phone. This was our junior year. This was in May after school ended. And she wanted to like have like a talk, you know, and kept cutting out. Do you remember this? You kept cutting out and you're like,
no,
you know, we'll talk later. And like, she finally says like, I'm ready to give this a shot. And, but that when her phone was cutting out, she thought it was a sign that we weren't meant to be together. And I'm like, that is the stupidest thing ever.
So it's funny because when I first met him, I like it, the time that he remembers at the bar, and he said, if he gets to go on a date with you, I do. I remember coming home and telling my mom. So I was like a serial monogamist my whole life. Like, had a boyfriend since I was like 15 and like was single for maybe like a month total in my life. So before we re-met at the bar, I was single for the first time since I was like 15. And I was like adamant that I was going to be single for like a good 3 to 6 months and like just go balls to the wall with singledom. So, and I remember coming home after I met him and telling my mom, we were on a walk, and I said, listen, the thing about it that's frustrating is that I think I'm going to marry him,
mm-hmm.
but I don't want to get married right now. And so I can't do anything about it.
And you ended up married. Like, how old were you? 22, 23?
23. So what ended up happening?
We were 22. It was 2005.
Oh, yeah. So what ended up happening, almost 23, is that we were like best friends, literally to the point where all of his teammates thought we were together. They would like make jokes about it all the time. We were always together, but I was like adamant that I didn't want a boyfriend. And nothing physical was happening. We were just buddies. And that went on until he said May. And then we said, okay, we're going to do this. And by July, we were engaged. Mm. And then a year and a half engagement because of baseball. Yeah.
I came back. It must have been like over the All-Star break. I was in Quad Cities at the time, so it was a short couple hour drive.
Yeah, it was Quad Cities.
And I came back. I just don't remember if we had an off day or what, but I came back and
proposed and went back to baseball.
Yeah. Well, left that night, proposed and left that night to go back.
Well, that's one thing I really find interesting about your career is that, so you're in the minors, low minors, you know, your first round pick, but you're in the low minors and you're married. Were you living together? Were you in separate cities? And how did that?
So we got engaged the summer going into senior year of college. So
2004. It was right after I got drafted.
Yeah. Summer going into my senior year.
Yeah.
So I went back to school and I finished my senior year. It's the one thing I get to hold over Glenn. Glenn's better at me than just about everything, but I have a degree.
Oh, were you done after your junior year?
Yeah.
Because you got drafted in
third year. Okay. Yeah.
So one of us has got a college degree. But
I did help you in college.
He did. He was very helpful my senior year.
Yeah. I got her straight A's.
Oh.
Not doing any work. Just like making sure she studied. I helped you study a little bit. I would bring her like Chipotle. Because I wasn't in school, you know. So I got home in the fall of 04 from the season and had nothing to do. Yeah. And like all of my friends were still in college. And so I would come hang out up there a lot. So then she finished. I bought a townhouse in Lakeville that fall.
And I still had a place at the U.
And she was in school, so she would kind of go back and forth. I was going up there to work out, to throw all those things. So I was still up there a lot, too. And so she lived at the townhouse and then at school. And then we ended up selling that. After you graduated, we sold that. Because we didn't get married until 2005, so we were engaged.
Year and a half.
Yeah, July of 04 and got married in December of 05.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's about a year and a half.
Yeah,
Alicia.
Roughly,
yeah,
roughly
about
18 months.
About a year and a half.
Yeah. You think that? Yeah, like 1 year, 6 months.
Yeah,
about
roughly.
That.
Yeah.
About that.
And so we, but then so we were getting married in December of 2005. So like after when I got home from the 2005 season, I went and played in a league in Arizona, the Fall League. And then when I came back, she decided that she was going to move back home at that point. For like the 6 weeks before we got married. So we were living together.
Yeah, it was.
We were living together.
It was an issue with my parents. And it's here we are 14 years later.
But
it's water under the bridge.
But but this is an interesting story because a lot of guys in your position don't get married at a young age like that. But you're married and then even you had kids young too. Mm-hmm. So here you are, you're juggling a career, you're juggling your young parents, you're moving, and you're in small towns, too. Were you living together? Alicia, were you still here in Minnesota? Glenn, were you playing baseball elsewhere? How did that all work?
So it was kind of interesting. So after we got married, I did go with him for a while. So after we got married in, like he said, December of 05, and we got pregnant in February of 06 with Addie, our oldest, which it was planned.
Well, we had decided that there was two ways to go about it. You either have kids right away, so then you can enjoy, like, well, we're going to be empty nesters at 41.
Sounds really nice.
Doesn't it? We figured, here was our thought process. We're like, you can either wait and have kids, which is fine, and enjoy, like, your young years. But, like, we had enjoyed college. It wasn't like we missed out on anything. Or you can have kids young. And then when you have money later on in life, that's when you can go do fun stuff. Right. So we were kind of like, and my parents are super young. They were 20 and 21 when I was born. Mm-hmm. So, and they're still extremely hands-on. And so I'd always hoped I could have kids young. Like I would have had kids at 12 if I could have, honestly. Like I loved children. So it was like a no-brainer. 12
is a little young.
Listen, I get it, but I was, I babysat, I nanned. Like I just loved kids. So I couldn't wait. And I knew the responsibility it took, for the most part, I guess, to have kids. And I knew that I'd be alone for a lot of it with him. But that's partially why we lived in Lakeville, too, was because my parents live there. And so my mom was kind of like my second husband for the first several years of our kids.
She would kind of come and go during seasons.
There wasn't a lot of minor league time, though. I mean, like, no. We had Addie. So I was pregnant with Addie in New Britain.
Yep.
And then he got called up
in September, before she was born.
Yeah, when I was 8 months pregnant with Addie. Yeah. And then we had Addie in the off season, which was planned. It's nice to have an off season baby. And then the next year he started with the twins.
I was in Rochester for a week.
Oh yeah. And we went with him to Rochester. Yeah. And in the middle of the night, he came home and was like, we got to go the next morning, like 6 a.m.
Like,
flight
are you
to
renting
Minnesota.
An apartment?
Yeah,
we were living with Kevin Slowey.
We had Kevin Slowey as my roommate. Yeah. Right. And,
he's actually our youngest godfather. Okay. That's how close we
are. You still talk to him?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
He lived with us for a while.
So you just rent an apartment. And yeah, I mean, like, it was after the game. And they were like, yeah, you're going to Minnesota. Your flight's at 6:30. I'm like, okay, I've got a wife here and a kid. And so like, yeah, get you flights and whatnot. And so I got back and was like, we need to pack because we're out of here.
So basically, though, we were like, I was kind of used to that before, though. So because before we even had kids, even before we got married, like when we were engaged, that was kind of my job for a while, was like I would fly out to see him. And then what would always inevitably happen is he'd get called up. And so like he would be gone within 12 hours and I would have to clean everything up, pack everything up, drive the car from, you know, Tennessee to Florida to Florida to Connecticut. And that was kind of my role for a little while. So it wasn't uncommon for us to like figure out how to drop everything and go. And then after Lila, it got a little messy because there was some up and down.
Yeah, 2010 was tough because that was...
Lila was born in season too.
Yeah, Lila was born, but I was in the big leagues for that.
So Addie's 13 now.
She'll be 13 in November.
Yeah. Okay, and then Lila's 11.
She just turned 11 in August 10th.
August 10th.
Okay, so what are they, 18 months apart?
22.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought they were like 20.
21 months. Yeah. 21 months.
Okay.
Part. 1 year and nine months.
We're really nailing this math.
I'm a big year guy, too. I'm a big year, big month. Yeah. 1 year,
9 months.
I need my chronological timeline here.
Yeah. So they were pretty close together.
Lila was not as planned as Addie was.
No. You don't want to have an in-season
baby. We had Addie, and then I was in the living room, and she comes down, and she's like, can you pee on one of these pregnancies? So... We had a friend that of her parents that like worked for Johnson & Johnson or something. And so we got these pregnancy tests. Well, they were in my car in the winter for like in a grocery bag for like a month.
Like he had a bunch of free, like, cause he didn't know what to do with them. And like his, you know, he doesn't need them for his wife. You know, they're in their 50s or whatever. And so he's like, do you know anybody who could take these? And she's like, yeah, actually, you know, I bet Alicia could take them. So Glenn went and picked him up and then they sat in his car for
like all winter long or whatever. And so she, unbeknownst to me, goes and pees in one. Or on one. And I'm like, well, yeah, you know, or what if she's like, hey, I did this.
No, I came downstairs and I'm holding the test and I'm like, we have a problem.
Yeah, that was it.
And he's like, what? I'm like, I'm either pregnant or these are broken. So we go upstairs. I peed on 10 of them.
Wow.
And I peed on one.
So they all said positive. I'm like, they're
broken.
And mine
was negative.
His was negative. So that's how we found out we were having Lila.
And I was she said, we have a problem. And I was like, it's not a problem. Like, we're, you know, whatever. Like, because it's easy for me. Like, I'm not doing, like, I come and go as I please or as I'm told. And
well, that's, I'm glad you bring that up because, Alicia, I want to ask you because at this time, all right, so with you and, a career and, you know, so Glenn has his career and it's taking off, but you as a mom and any career aspirations that you had, what is happening at that time? How are you balancing stuff?
Oh, I'm not doing anything besides being a mom and unfortunately following him around. Like that's the hard part is that you have to, as a professional athlete's wife, you have to give up. If you want to see them, you have to give up like who you are in order to support them. And so we had a lot of talks about it because I was never really comfortable just being somebody's wife and mother. Not that those aren't wonderful things, they are, and I'm so very thankful for them, but we would talk about it time and again, like at some point it's my turn. And he would be like, as soon as this is over, it's your turn. Like, I'm going to, it's whatever you want to do at that point. Like, I'm going to support you fully. And so we just, I kind of kept that in the back of my head. And I tried a few times to push the limits of like trying to actually, you know, what's funny. At one point, our oldest entered dance lessons, which was short lived because Glenn wasn't a huge fan. And he talked him out of it. I shut that down
real quick. Dance dad.
No. I refused.
Every time they got out of practice, he'd be like, you didn't like that, did you?
It didn't look like you were having any fun. That could not have been fun. Was that fun?
Well, I'm a basketball guy, so that's the way I am with our kids in hockey. Like, I like hockey.
Oh, we're a hockey family.
But I'm a basketball guy, so I'm like, skating, I don't know. But boy, let's go shoot. Yeah. All right, we'll do that.
How's that working out?
Yeah, it's slow.
In the state
it's
of slow. Hockey?
Yeah.
So I don't even remember where I was going with this story. What was I talking about?
You were talking about giving everything up and just being
So our oldest starts dance, and she needs dance. A tutu, okay? And I have always been a little unique.
Crafty, artsy.
And so I'm like, I'm not just going to have her show up in like some pink tutu. So I Google online how to make a tutu. And so I made her this like rainbow multicolored tutu, and we show up and people are just like going nuts. And it turns out one of the people there is the owner of Uber Baby. Do you remember that store at all?
Sounds familiar.
There was a couple of them. And she's like, oh my gosh, I will pay you to make these. And I was like, oh, okay. It was pretty easy. And then it just kind of snowballed from there. And I ended up in a ton of stores locally and nationally. I mean, I was probably, if I would have kept doing it, I was probably making like 20 or 30 grand making tutus.
Wow.
But I was also
all
like,
handmade, like pulling that.
Yes. Yeah. Tool.
What's that? Tool. Yes. And like tying it around like a waistband thing.
Wow.
But so it got to the point where like, I was literally like, I'd put the kid, like you guys said, I'd put the kids to bed at like 8, and then I'd be up from like 8 until 2 a.m. Making tutus. Mm-hmm. I'd go to bed. I'd get back up at like 7 a.m. And I just was like, this is, what am I doing? Like, this is ridiculous. So that I tried a few things to find my identity, but it always just kind of came down to like, okay, well, as long as he's doing this, this is what we're all doing. But we never fully like subscribed to the whole professional athlete. We never took our kids have, I think, have been to 3 baseball games, and they were the All-Star games, and they whined about going.
They've been to for sure less than 15 games in my whole career. Because you would go to some games on the road, like you went to a game at Fenway, you'd go to a game here or there. Yeah. Like, legitimately, 15 or less games. Because it just, like, late nights, all those things, like, it just wasn't, that wasn't our schedule, that wasn't our thing.
I told you, we're sleep Nazis at our
And house. We both had, like, our identity was not tied up in the game. Like, I was into other things, interested in other things, and so it wasn't the most important thing in that sense to us. And so then they just didn't go. And I didn't need them there. I'm not going to pick them out of a crowd.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's the other funny part is people be like, why don't you go? And I'm like, well, there's a couple of reasons. One, it's late. And like my wine tastes better at home. I don't have to put on makeup. Like nobody's judging me at home. Two, when he became the closer, I'm like, this isn't happening till like 10 o'clock at night.
If it happens.
Right, yeah. Like you could sit there for 3 hours and he might never come out. So I was like, that's a waste of our time. And I mean, three, like fans are wonderful, but there's been times where I've sat in the stands and they obviously don't know who you are. And the things they say can be rather hurtful. And I didn't want to put our kids around that.
What do they think now, though? Now that they're a little bit older, you know, and you've been away from the games for 3-4 years now, but what do they say now or think about daddy's career, you know?
They don't really...
I don't think they have a grasp of it.
No, and like, I think Lila's probably still just a little too young to get it, and like, she's way more into sports. But like, I think the biggest thing is that baseball's of no interest to either of them. So, like, they both, I mean, every Sunday when the twins are at home have the family day. So I'd bring them in, like, bring them in the clubhouse. They'd play around. We'd go on the field and play. We'd eat breakfast in the clubhouse, all these things. And they never cared. And then last year I brought Lila down to the locker room of the Wild after a game. And her jaw was, like, her chin was on the floor the entire time. Like, there's no, like, she got to meet all these guys that she loves watching. And like, so I think because they're not interested in baseball, they just don't really care. They're like, yeah, whatever. Like he played that dumb sport that I don't like watching.
I
told Lila, I'm like, Lila, you know, you like, and all these guys like sign sticks for her and all this stuff. Yeah. And like, she thinks it's the greatest thing ever. They're all hanging on her wall. And like,
your dad was like, the best in the game. three-time All-Star.
Yeah. Like, do you realize like you got to grow up like eating food in a major league clubhouse and playing on like running around on a major league field?
And like, well, I also think it's just like what you know, right? I mean, like we have pictures of them like at the Florida house, and like there's a picture where they're sitting on the deck, and it's Maurer and then his wife Maddie, and so like Maddie's sitting on Joe's lap, and then Addie is on Maddie's lap, and then Lila's on Addie's lap, and they're just this whole like stacked situation, you know, and like they're like, oh, that's just Maddie and Joe, and then like the friends come over, and like somebody else see me like, oh my god, is that Joe Maurer? And they're like, yeah, it's Joe. Like, you know, so I think it's just all relative too, where you're just like, I'll never forget, we went to the All-Star game though, and like they were just begging to leave. Do we have to stay here?
Oh, at Target Field?
Any
the one at Target Field?
Oh, okay. Oh, and
they wanted no part of it.
We were like 10 feet from like Pitbull performing in front of us, and they're like, when can we go back to the hotel? I'm like, oh my God, like, you know how many kids would die right now.
They still like, they find it weird now, like when I get recognized like at dinner or, you know, wherever we go. They're starting, like Lila thinks it's kind of cool, and Addie, like
they're starting to get a lot of questions from their schoolmates too, as they get older, like when people piece it together, then they're suddenly like,
I think some of that stuff, and them being girls, like they, you know, they're not around like the 24/7 sports that like our friends that have boys are.
Yeah.
And so they just, which is fine. Like, I love that, because I had a teammate that I lived by early on in my career, and we would carpool sometimes, and we'd get back and like, I'd drop him off. So I'd go in and have a beer with him or whatever. And like, it's 11:30 at night. We just were at the baseball field for 9 hours, and his kid's up like throwing the ball into his glove. Like, dad, I'm ready to play baseball. And I'm like, oh my God, if I had to play baseball, like,
yeah,
I was just in the Metrodome for 9 hours. I don't want to even think about baseball.
Yeah.
And so I love that, like having girls not doing any of the baseball stuff. And like, people ask all the time, like, oh, are they good at softball? Do they play softball? I'm like, no, they tried it. They hated it. And like, I was good with that. Like, I got to do a ton of different stuff.
It's funny. And we're certainly not at your level at all, but, our oldest started pre-K, and his teachers were like, so what do your mom and dad do?
Oh, jeez.
And he's like, I don't know. They work.
And they're like, well, what does your mom do? She works. And I'm like, what is, they're like, oh.
They're like, were they on Care 11? He's like, I have no idea. I really have no idea
whatever
what they do.
You say
I don't
they
care.
Do. Yeah.
Hell, he's dad. He's going to pick me up, I guess.
Yeah. We used to say, because I hated that question too, and people are like, what does your husband do? I'm like, oh, you know, he works downtown.
Yeah.
And
did you say
like,
that?
Yeah. And they'll be like, what does he do? I'm like, well, he's a male entertainer. Because that he was. I mean, that he was there for your entertainment.
Wearing in tight pants.
He was. They're like, what? I'm like, he plays for the Twins. Can we talk about something else?
There was one guy.
You just don't want to. No. You know, and it's cool, but it's also like, okay, I just.
If you,
you
like,
know,
yeah,
I don't,
if you
I don't
lead know. With it, it's like, yeah.
There's this place that I go hunting at in South Dakota every year. And they have a big bar, like you stay there, like all-inclusive lodged kind of thing or whatever. And so I was there one time, and like the word always ends up getting around, because it's usually people from the West are coming to like deer hunt, pheasant hunt, and whatever. And the one time, so I'm like sitting at the bar one night having a beer, and like this guy is like, so, you know, what do you do? Like trying to like get me to admit it. I'm like, oh, I'm a consultant. In Minneapolis. He goes, oh, who do you consult? I'm like, for the Minnesota Twins. He goes, yeah, so some people were saying that you work for the Twins. And I'm like, I looked at you and was like, there's no way that guy's a player. And I'm like, yeah, no, I'm not. I just do some consulting work for him.
Yeah. So now, Alicia, Glenn's career is finally over.
Finally
right?
over.
Well, now it's your turn.
It's my turn.
So what... You know, passion, and that's one thing I think Camille and I both admire about you too, is that, you know, you live for a purpose, right? And that's something that's really important to you guys.
Yeah. So it's interesting. I think, I mean, like obviously we're both from Minnesota, and like part of the reason it was easy for us to raise a family and like also stay really grounded was we were surrounded by our family and friends here, which a lot of players don't get the ability to do. You know, you go to a different city for 6 months, and the only people you have are your teammates and their wives. And So it was really important to both of us to give back to this community that supports us. And it's no secret. I wrote a book about it. I was diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder after our oldest was born. And so mental health, and whether it's breaking the stigma or just providing care for those who can't afford it, it became a very important part of our platform. I mean, and if you can't use your platform for good, I mean, what are you really doing?
What exactly is generalized anxiety then?
Yeah, you know, that's the hard part. And I think that's the part that makes the stigma so difficult, is that it's different for everybody, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, for some people, it's like this traumatic fear of getting on an airplane and it, you know, paralyzes them. They can't do it. I have no problem getting on an airplane, but when he was gone on the road, I wasn't sleeping, mainly because it had to do with fear of something happening to the girls or I, and not being able to like fend for ourselves. Or, I mean, it was all irrational. That's I think that's the best word to come down to anxiety, is like it's a continuous irrational thought that you can't get out of, no matter how hard you try. It would be awesome if you could just stop it. But it continues to spiral. And the hard part, too, is like in the beginning, before I was medicated, I did a lot of therapy. And the interesting part about it is that once you, like, okay, so let's say your issue is flying, right? And you go to a therapist and you work on flying and you're finally able to get onto a plane and you can fly, you know, 30-minute flight to Madison, okay?
Yeah.
Then, so you're like, okay, I'm feeling good about it. Then basically what will happen to somebody with generalized anxiety disorder is the anxiety will find something else to attach to. So now you're going to be afraid of walking into a room with people that, you know, I don't, you know, like just random things. Yep. Crowded room. Now you're afraid of a crowded room. So now it's going to hyper-focus on that. So now you can't enter a crowded room. Now you can fly, maybe. Maybe not great, but you can do it. But now you have this new fear of a crowded room. So it just kind of keeps perpetuating itself and finding different things to latch onto.
What's really interesting is that for the longest time, I don't know if you did this or not, but you don't want to open up about it, right? People did not want to open up about it. It was almost seen as like, I don't want people to see me as weak, or this is a weakness, or there's something wrong with me. But through your work and through others' work, it's like you're breaking down those thoughts and that stigma of like, well, no, it's not a weakness. This is, you know, and that takes strength to do that.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. Like we just actually did an interview the other day and we were talking about, you know, two things happen. One, like 1 in 4 people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Diagnosed. I mean, it's probably half the population that's living with one, whether they're diagnosed or not. So I've never encountered a situation where I've said, I am living with anxiety, and somebody's been like, I'm sorry, what's anxiety? You know, like everybody knows exactly what it is. Everybody has felt some level of it at some point in their life. So the fact that we feel the need to not talk about it, or that it makes us less than, is just super confusing to me. And also, we were actually at a Starbucks when we were doing this interview, and I said, it's so fascinating to me how if your best friend were to come to you tomorrow and say, you guys, I just came over to the doctor and I have cancer, you would never say to them, like, maybe you just need to get out more. You just need to suck it up. Maybe it's in your head, you know, like, but yet when somebody's diagnosed with anxiety, depression, bipolar, that's the response that they get from people. And we were sitting there and I was saying this, and right behind us was a guy and his daughter. And he said, excuse me, I don't mean to interrupt, but I kind of overheard your conversation. And he said that he was in Afghanistan, right? And he lost his leg in Afghanistan. And he said that he came back to the States and he said that he was diagnosed with PTSD, and that people just kept like at the veterans, the VA.
Mm-hmm.
They just kept telling him to get over it, move on. They tried to give him ketamine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like our response to these issues is just, it's so messy and convoluted, and it doesn't need to be for something that people can't control. It's so interesting to me how we treat physical ailments so carefully and delicately, and we're so kind and helpful to people. But when it comes to people dealing with mental ones, it's the opposite effect, yeah. Which is just, it's so sad. It's yeah. frustrating and it needs to change. And like you said, there's a lot of people who have come forward. I mean, like Kevin Love, I mean, and especially men, when men come forward, that's a huge step because it's way harder, especially for somebody like him to admit to something like that. Somebody yeah. that the world sees as powerful and strong, you know? And so for him to say, well, I got this too.
And Gophers football coach PJ Fleck talking about it in a post game press conference about I'm really proud of some of our players, and the University of Minnesota has now resources to help players and students with mental health. And I thought, wow, here's a guy that people look up to,
yeah.
And here's a guy who's in charge of. I mean, football's gladiator sport, right?
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter. It doesn't pick and choose, you know.
Yeah. Oh yeah, not at all. So yeah. So that's. That's that.
That's cool. But you got a book.
I do have a book that has nothing to do with that. So it's actually funny. So after I accidentally wrote Running Home, which was kind of just a catharsis that Glenn was nice enough to convince me to publish, and actually got really positive response. And because again, like it just takes one person to come forward. It doesn't have to be somebody famous to say, you know, I have this and it sucks.
No.
For other people to be like, oh my gosh, like, just to feel not alone, you know, to feel that other people know exactly what you're going through is always helpful. So actually a friend of mine recommended the book On Writing by Stephen King. It's like half his autobiography, which is fascinating just to read in and of itself, but it's actually half of like how he writes. And he said in it that he doesn't plot. He just takes a character and puts it in a situation and goes. And we were in Florida for Glenn's last spring training, and I thought, what an interesting exercise. Like, I've always been very right-brained, creative, and I thought, I wonder if I could do that. Like, fiction was always just, like, fascinating to me that somebody could come up with an entire world in their head. And so I gave it a shot, and I said, Glenn's a big reader, and so I wrote, like, 1,000 words, and I was sitting in our bedroom mm-hmm. on the bed typing, and he was in the, I think you were reading in the living room.
Yeah, probably.
And I, like, typed it up, and I emailed it to him, and he read it and he's like, this is really good. Who wrote this? And I was like, I did. So it just kind of kept going. And now here we are.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
so one game that we always do, Camille and I, we always do the table topics.
Mm-hmm.
You want to set them up
for
the,
sure.
For the table topics? Yeah.
Okay. Well,
I'm having like a hot flash over here. Don't mind me.
You've been on the spotlight though.
I think we were at a tennis match before this, and it was really hot out, and I think I just am, like, still overheating. Anyways, yeah, moving on.
It was a hot day. I mean, I was hot.
It was a weird day.
It got
day.
Sneaky hot.
Yeah. Sneaky hot,
it did
yeah.
get sneaky was, hot.
Yeah. Snuck
yesterday
up on you.
Was sneaky yeah. cold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fall in Minnesota.
Yeah. It's confusing. So we want to know, when it comes to the kids, hey, what a win. What was a win for you guys this week?
Wow. This week with the kid, well, watching our daughter today mm-hmm. play tennis, she's never been a competitive kid.
Not and, in sports.
In sports, like a physical competition kid.
She's our academic. She
tried to play tennis a couple years ago and did some practices and some lessons and then got to the point where she was going to play in a match and had a panic attack and couldn't play. She said, if I beat that kid, I'm gonna feel bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so to see her today go out and compete all on her own, I don't not, maybe you yeah. told her to play tennis. I don't know.
No, she just kind of. So basically, what happened was last year was her first year in middle school, and she ended up just absolutely loving this teacher, and Mr. Oh, Surgeon. Yeah, we'll right. give him a shout yeah. out. He is an amazing educator.
Yeah,
and he's the coach. And so she ran cross country last year and it was fine. I mean, she did well, but she doesn't love it. And so then when it came this year, we're like, you got to do something. Like you can't, like literally she doesn't do any other sports year round. I'm like, you got to do something. She's like, I think I want to do tennis because Mr. Surgeon's the coach. And here we are. Mm. She's been loving it. It's kind of blown both of us.
Yeah. Away. It's just to see her show some competitiveness and like, they won a point today, and you could see like her excitement. Yeah. Like you could see her like wanted to smile and cheer. Yeah. And we never see that. Like she's an incredible student, and she gets home if she doesn't have her homework done, like in homeroom or whatever, study hall, she's like working on it in the car ride and then doing, you know, she's that kid. And so to see her like show some excitement in an athletic competition was, that was pretty dang cool. Yeah.
Just to feel good about herself, yeah. I think, in an athletic That's competition. Great. Yeah, yeah. We're like having a moment over here.
That's good.
It was good.
We spend so much time watching our other daughter play hockey.
Yeah.
Okay.
And like our whole winter revolves around the hockey schedule. And so Addie like gets left in the dust. And so to have it be about her was really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now, hey, that was hard. So it was a hard thing with the kids. Something happened. It was hard for you with the kids.
They're so easy. The thing, like they are, like
they're at
an age where like they still like us, like they you know they don't get have short fuses with us. They, you know, like they're still innocent.
Yeah, and they're 11 and 13 or yeah. close to.
Yeah, so we're at a point where like
they're in a really good spot right now. It's imminent. Like,
yeah.
It's like, it's been going, like, the summer was great. Like, we had a bunch of great times, and they're just at an age where they're so easy. So I feel like it is.
Yeah, I can't come up with one off the top of my head.
And we've had a pretty
bedtime
good.
Bedtime is always kind of a struggle at our house. Yeah. Now. They fight it. They want to stay up. They think it's too early. They make up a bunch of excuses.
Yeah. I mean, I had to tell Lila to shower. She sweating her butt off, so fighting with her to get in the shower tonight. Maybe that's
she'll appreciate. Just get in the shower.
Yeah, just go. I don't want to go right now. No, you're gonna go right now.
Yeah,
I'll go. I'm like, no, you're gonna go before I walk out of this house.
Getting them off their devices. That's a struggle.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Do you ever use that line? I'm not asking you. I'm telling you.
I use that tonight.
Okay, because I feel like I use that all the time.
Oh, funny. I don't think I've ever said that.
I don't want to do it right now. I said I'm not asking you. I'm not asking you to go take a shower. I'm telling you it's time to go take a shower.
Yeah. Oh, that feels like, a little too much like my parents. I think that would be hard for me to swallow.
I know. I find myself sounding like my parents pretty often.
Yeah, it happens. It happens. What's that quote? When did I become my mother?
Right. Yeah. Oh, my God. That insurance commercial, and it's like a guy.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, when did I become my mother? And he turns into the mom.
Yes.
They're like dressed alike.
Yes.
Think you should have left it in for five more minutes.
Yes.
All right. So, hey, you happy? So now this is more like between you two. Like, you did something for the spouse that made them happy, and you know it.
So we answer like,
yeah,
like I know what I did for him,
or maybe what he did for you that made
yeah.
you happy.
Okay, yeah, that makes it easier. Yeah. It just happened on the way up here. I was having a moment in the car, and it took me a good 30 minutes to explain a situation, but then he helped me walk through it and figure it out and calm my mind.
Yeah, I also think the last 2 days, having lunch.
We got to have lunch with each other,
like with the kids
together.
Going back to school.
Nice.
Like, we went to lunch.
That's not a euphemism. We actually did go eat lunch.
Netflix and chill, though.
Yeah. Today we ate at pizza place, Geek Cafe. What was it called?
Geek Love.
Geek Love
Cafe.
It's
a pizza
in Moon
giant.
Palace Bookstore. Huh. Okay.
Oh. No. So we're on Hiawatha and Lake.
You guys.
Oh. Good.
It was good.
My pizza was fantastic.
Who knew in a bookstore?
Yeah. It's like literally in the back of a bookstore. So we went there, and there was just a little place by our house that we went to yesterday. But being able to like spend some time together because the summers are so crazy.
Yeah.
And so I think that was pretty cool this week.
That was a good answer.
So then the next one is, hey, are you mad?
I feel like you should swap these.
We should switch them out maybe. So then you end with that.
Yeah.
Because we're about to tell you something and then we're going to fight in the car right home.
But I got these.
That's what the hey, you mad is the fight we're going to have in the car right home.
Yeah.
I'll smooth it over though. I got a nice lovemaking card to, you know, at the end there. So yeah, we got the next one.
What am I mad about?
Well, we can put this on the radio. It's that time of the month for her right now.
Oh, geez.
It's not quite.
And
we're close.
So she has a knack for picking a fight.
This is getting really out there.
She has a knack for picking a fight. And usually I pick up on it when I'm like, this is so ridiculous. And I'm like, it's got to be that time of the month. Like,
you
it'll hit me.
You know how, like, and then if they call you out
I'm like,
on it.
Because I'm like,
it makes you super upset.
I'm like, there is no way, like, that you would actually be mad about this, like, mm-hmm. in a normal situation.
God,
and it was something yesterday that you were.
That.
Oh,
I know it's best.
I had cooked chili, and I had like the pot, like some of the chili burned to the bottom of the pot. So I put it in the sink, and I filled it up with water to let it soak till today when I did the dishes, because I do the dishes at home. And she looks in the sink and is like, "Are you just gonna let this sit here?" And I was like, "Well, yeah, it's gotta soak. Everything burnt in the bottom. Okay. This is exactly what happened."
I was not talking about the pot. I was talking about like.
And she goes, "Well, you could at least clean out the sink." I'm like, "I'm not gonna clean the sink out around the pot. Like, I'll just clean everything at the same time." And that one, it didn't hit me because it's not as ridiculous as some of them. But then
they do get pretty ridiculous. But then, and I know I'm doing it. But then he'll be like, then what makes it 10 times worse is he'll be like, "So is it going to be like that time of the month?" And I'm like, "Okay, are you kidding me?" And then I get like 10 times more mad. I'm like, "No, and what makes you, how terrible of you to think that?"
God, I'm so excited you brought that up. I'm just really excited.
We've really nailed like every male stereotype on this podcast today.
What's missing is the deep eye roll I just gave Corey.
Oh, yeah.
No one can hear that.
That doesn't get picked up on the microphone.
I usually, Glenn, I'll be like, okay, because I know, but I'm just, you know, just going to.
Oh, so you just like let her go.
Try to.
Oh, no, then it gives me attitude with like some eyes, and then that just makes me go.
I do that. I mean, I think there's no way to actually get through it.
Yeah, I think that no matter what you do, it's not going to end well.
Yeah.
Okay, so, all right. That was more fun than I thought. That was great.
We got real intimate there.
Here's a card. We just pulled it from the deck. It's, I can't remember what this game's called.
It's called Vertels.
Vertellus. Oh, Vertels. Vertellus, something like that. But it's just like a card game. Okay, so here we go. Within the past year, in retrospect,
oh goodness,
for you two, of which personal achievement are you most proud of? And so this is for yourself. So Alicia, you can start with that. Of which personal achievement are you most proud of?
Oh God, this feels really braggy. I have two, I think. Actually, I'll just narrow it down to one. Doing a TED Talk. Being chosen to do
awesome.
TED Talk.
Yeah. I saw it. It's great stuff.
Thank you. They told me later that they had over 100 applicants and only picked us 8. So that was pretty.
That's really
cool. Was a moment. And then actually that led to my publisher finding me, which was also kind of a kismet moment. So
awesome.
That is really cool.
Yeah. Do we play like Cards Against Humanity next or something?
We should really so fun. Play that.
It's off the air.
What did I accomplish?
That's
I feel
a
like
great.
I, like,
Glenn
don't
hasn't
accomplish
done
much
anymore.
I've did all my accomplishments. No, you know what? I think it's a little generalized, but just going like starting the next phase of my life career. You know, with some TV stuff and some radio stuff. I took time off and like making that jump, like it's gone well for me because I think I have the personality for it, but it's not like it's, I think at some point I'll look back and realize like it was a little bit bigger jump, like just going from like playing to like, I'm going to go stand in front of a TV camera where like, you know, both of you guys have done that. And like, it takes training and it takes work.
Years.
And so to, cause I'm so proud of her and the stuff that she does, like with the books and like all the legwork, and it's all on her own. And like my whole career, like I worked hard, but I was also super lucky. And like everybody, there was always somebody doing something for me. Like it didn't feel nearly as self-made as like her getting a book published. And so, I think this is kind of that for me, like where this isn't what I was like meant to do, but it's something that I've enjoyed and something that like I'm sticking my neck out there really for what me feels like the first time.
Yeah.
Well, he was just saying on the way up here or this morning, I think in the car, right, maybe to lunch, that he was just talking about, he's like, how hard it is to do interviews with people. He's like, you would think intuitively that it's like super easy because I've known these people and I'm just, you know, but he's like, it is so hard. He's like, it just has taken
the
me
first
time.
Interview I did was Kyle Gibson, and I've known him for 10 years. And I'm like, I'll just talk to him. Yep. And like, it didn't go like that. Like, you have to have some sort of an outline, you know? And so I've done like 4 or 5 now. And it's like, but yeah, those are all things that seem easy. Like, just getting in front of a TV, hosting a radio show or a podcast or anything like that seems easy, and it's not.
Is this what you hope? So like at the end, we'd like come back to complimenting you and like how awesome you guys are at your jobs.
That's usually how they got. That's usually how they got this thing. Yeah.
We've been waiting the whole time. Yeah. Just could not wait.
Yeah. Corey, tell me more about yourself.
Yeah. I'm really good at that. So this has been great. Thanks you guys for coming to the basement and telling us your story.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you for having us. This was fun.